You're listening to a special Encore Smart Talk broadcast from 2 years ago that marked the 50th anniversary of the premiere of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on TV. Governor Tom Wolf has designated today as 143 Day in Pennsylvania. Inspired by Fred Rogers, Pennsylvanians are encouraged to share acts of kindness and good deeds for each other on 143 Day. In the first part of today's program, we'll be speaking with Deborah Acklin, President and CEO of WQED Multimedia. Ms. Acklin, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott.
Also joining us is Paul Sifkin, President of the Fred Rogers Company. Mr. Sifkin, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott.
The 50th anniversary, obviously it's a milestone anniversary, but as we pass that February 19th milestone, the exact date when the show premiered, it was just unbelievable how many media, how many people across the country marked the occasion. It showed just how beloved Mr. Rogers and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was. Paul, what did you think as you saw all this attention coming from across the country?
Well, I think it's a testament to how personal Fred made his appearance on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, so that there were generations of viewers who saw him as speaking directly to them, and he spoke about topics that were important to children, ideas. He acknowledged that sometimes children have angry feelings or might be worried about some things that are happening in their lives, and gave children an appreciation for that, and also sort of the ability to accept that it's okay to have those feelings. That spoke so strongly to children that I think as adults, when they look back on the program and they look back at Fred, they have very, very strong personal attachments to him.
And that was unique. Not only did Fred Rogers have a unique delivery, a unique way of presenting himself on the air, on the program, but that one-on-one, being able to connect with children, how was he able to do that?
Well, I think as he described it, he used to just imagine that he was talking to one child sitting there in their living room, and treated it as a conversation, a one-on-one conversation. And that was a really amazing skill. When you look at it from a production point of view, from a performance point of view, it's not easy to have that personal connection with the viewer. But he did that, and I think that's part of the reason why people remember him so fondly.
Something else that was striking is that, as I said, he had a unique delivery. He was unique on camera. But many children's programs, there were kids in the audience. There was a clown. There was a mascot, those kind of things. Now, there were characters on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. But Fred Rogers was the real deal. He was genuine. From what I understand, the person you saw on the program, that was Fred Rogers.
Yes, and I think part of the reason that he made Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was in response to what he was seeing on television, in response to hosts who were standing up and being clowns and there to entertain children rather than to engage them. And he took what he did very seriously and worked very hard at his craft to make sure that the messages he was giving were meaningful to children, and he respected his audience, and that was something that I think then and now stands out, particularly for children's entertainment. Unfortunately, I think in the entertainment world, children's entertainment was sort of late to the game of producers realizing that you need to respect your audience and present content at the level that they can understand it and that they can appreciate it. And Fred understood that very early on, and it was important.
February 19th, 1968, when you say 1968 to many people today, the first thing they think of is 50 years ago, what this country was like, Vietnam, civil rights era. There was a lot of chaos going on. There was a lot of violence. Not exactly the kind of era that you picture someone like Fred Rogers coming on the air and talking to children, but as you said, he talked about some of the issues that kids were hearing about, maybe not dealing with, but hearing about around them. How important was that in that era?
Well, that is something that I've heard a lot about from people who were working on the program and who were watching at that time was that Fred was giving permission for children to have feelings other than, you know, happy feelings all the time. Television didn't have to be all about laughs and jokes and pies in the face. He was acknowledging that we live in a world and that sometimes this world isn't perfect. And we're going to acknowledge for children that he understood that and that he was listening to the issues that were going on in the day.
Deborah Acklin, you are the president and CEO of WQED Multimedia here in Pittsburgh. The program debuted, premiered on PBS in 1968. So WQED's role in starting the Mr. Rogers Show, Mr. Rogers Neighborhood.
Well, I'll tell you, Scott, I think that WQED and Fred Rogers are absolutely intertwined from day one.
I've always thought of that, yeah.
Yeah, and that's actually the true story. It's very much our origin story at WQED is the Fred Rogers story. So as I understand it, and these are things that were told to me, is that Fred was our very first program director. So some of you may know that WQED is the first and still the first community-owned public television station in the country, and really was the first. So there were a handful of stations in the country. They were going to start a station in Pittsburgh, came up with the great name of WQED, and Mr. Rogers, at that point Fred Rogers, as I understand it, was working at NBC in New York and decided to come back to his hometown, his home region. He was born in Latrobe, and start along with this startup television station. So he was literally deciding what went on the air the first few months, and then the woman who ran the station, and yes, in 1954 it was a woman who was the station manager, pulled him and a woman who was a performer at the Pittsburgh Playhouse and put them together because she needed a children's program that could be expandable. It could go to fill whatever time block they needed to fill. And they put them together. Josie Carey was a great singer. Fred was a musician and had other skills. And so they put it together into a program called Children's Corner. In Children's Corner, the early days, you can see the neighborhoods start to evolve and start to emerge. So Fred was there from the beginning. And of course, then in 1968, really put WQED on a national map 14 years after it began.
So when he started, now again, this is handed down to you, but right. What was his thinking, what was his vision of what kind of children's program did he want?
I don't know that I can answer that question except to tell you what I have observed and what I've been given to understand, which is that I'll tell you a great story, which may not exactly answer your question, but it does start to put some of the pieces in place, if that's okay. My understanding is that the night before our station went on the air, which the night before was March 31st, 1954, Mrs. Daniel, who was the name of the station manager, held a party for the people who were going to put the television station on the air the next day. She gave out party favors. The party favor she gave to Fred Rogers was a hand puppet of a tiger. He named the tiger Daniel in honor of Mrs. Daniel. And Daniel then later became an absolute star. He's a star to this day. My understanding, again, is that as they were trying to figure out how to fill the time of this live television, he and Josie, that someone cut a hole through a mat. Fred put the puppet through. And he said something like, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, something like that. And Daniel was born. And then the story was that the stage folks would paint something on the flat. One day there was a clock, one day there was an Eiffel Tower, and so on. And all of those, of course, became the iconic images from the neighborhood. I think it was later that he saw this potential of television and, my understanding, his own ministry in order to create a program that really did then become Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and was singular in its effect.
Well, if we've gotten nothing else out of this program today, we learned about Daniel Tiger. That is amazing. I've never heard that story before.
So when you see Daniel Tiger on PBS today, that is a legacy all the way back to Pittsburgh, 1954, and the origin of WQED.
Started the night before the TV stakes went on the air.
That's right.
Well, Paul, that brings up a point. Fred Rogers Company is commemorating, with a lot of other people, commemorating the 50th anniversary of the start of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and Daniel plays a big part in that. Talk about what the company has in mind for this year.
So Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood is currently one of the top performing series for PBS Kids, and is the animated version of the Neighborhood of Make-Believe. We thought, what a wonderful way to pay tribute to the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers would be to connect episodes of Daniel Tiger that we've created that are based on previous episodes of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And so next week on PBS stations nationwide, including WQED, PBS will be running a Daniel Tiger episode followed by the Mr. Rogers episode that inspired it. And we're hoping that that will be a wonderful opportunity for children to be introduced to Mr. Rogers, but also a co-viewing opportunity for parents to sit down with children and not only sort of share those stories and those lessons together, but also share some of their own history, because so many parents grew up with Mr. Rogers and they're very proud to now be raising their children on Daniel Tiger. So that's the role that Daniel Tiger is playing in the Mr. Rogers celebration. We have other things going on as well. March 6th, there is going to be a primetime special that is celebrating 50 years of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. That's hosted by Michael Keaton, who many people don't know, started his career at WQED.
That's right.
Working as a stagehand, I believe, on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And that also features a number of celebrities who are looking back at the great moments in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Some of those include John Lithgow, Esperanza Spalding, Sarah Silverman. So some voices that you might not expect to see, but also people like Yo-Yo Ma and Itzhak Perlman will be reflecting on not only the show, but their appearance on the show. And we're excited to offer that up to stations and to their viewers to look back, with adult eyes on the program that really was so formative for children's television in the last 50 years.
Let me ask you this question. Just what you were talking about, when you look at the program with adult eyes now you're much closer than most people, but what do you see? What do you see today that maybe you didn't as a younger person?
For me, again, with my eyes working in television, I'm really impressed with the choices that Fred made. He was very intentional about how the show was produced. The scripting was so precise. He made sure that every word that came out of his mouth was vetted by his mentor, Margaret McFarlane, to make sure that he was not only telling a story, but he was saying it in an age-appropriate way, in a way that was in line with proper child development techniques. So I look at that and look at the hard work that went into creating the program, and I'm very impressed by that. At the same time, I think it was an amazing improvisational show. Deb was talking about sort of from the very beginning, there was improvisation in terms of naming characters and coming up with set pieces. And those characters and those set pieces just sort of naturally flowed into the program. Very improvisational, but also the music on the show was live. That wasn't added later. That was right there on the show, just a remarkable combination of preparation and attention to detail on the front end, but then being willing to be completely improvisational in the process is an amazing thing to watch.
When you talk about everything, when the script is thought of how children will be impacted by it or what children will think about it, having some thought behind everything, I think one of the greatest stories that I've heard about Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is just the beginning and the end of the program, the idea behind walking in the front door, taking the jacket off that he wore during the day at work, we all assumed, putting on the cardigan sweater, changing into comfortable shoes. Why is that important?
Well, anybody who works with young children knows that routine is important. That helps children to understand a very confusing world when you're a young child. So that format of having a routine every day where Mr. Rogers came in the door, he welcomed us, and at the end, he left, was very helpful for children to understand this is the end of my television visit with Mr. Rogers. And one of the things that Fred believed was that the important thing after the visit was that children might turn that show off and then think about what they saw on the show in their real lives. He wasn't encouraging them to, you know, continue to watch the very next episode. There was no binge watching then. In fact, he was very happy to say goodbye at the end of it, and then children could walk away. So that was very important in terms of that formatting and that routine that he wanted to introduce to children.
And the cardigan sweaters made by his mother.
Yes. Again, that goes to sort of the... it's not the improvisational nature of the show, but sort of the homegrown nature of that show that... while it was very, very meticulously made, it was also somehow at the same time thrown together. It was a really terrific combination, a very unique program.
Paul mentioned Michael Keaton, and I had a number of people say, "Oh, you have to ask about Michael Keaton." I mean, who went on to become a big movie star. Mm-hmm. Talk about a young Michael Keaton's role in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Well, my understanding is it was sort of like the circus. You know, you had all of these characters coming together, and you know, you were talking about 1968. So when you look back at some of the pictures of the stagehands were long-haired dudes, you know, who looked like the times in many ways. And so those are some of the pictures of Michael Keaton as well. And my understanding is that he was quite a prankster on the set.
I could see that.
Yeah. And there was something that they did, a little bit of an obscure part of the neighborhood, was something called the Flying Zucchinis. And the Flying Zucchinis were sort of a faux circus act, I guess, in many ways. And definitely meant to be ridiculous and hilarious. And so Michael Keaton was part of that. One of the things I love is that he attributes the beginning of his career to WQED. I mean, it is a thrill for any Pittsburgher, and particularly anyone associated with WQED, to see him go up and accept a major international award and talk about getting his start at WQED in Pittsburgh. So we're so excited about this March 6th program that he's going to do, because it really does feel like he's our neighbor, too.
And that's just one of a number of things that are happening big this year. There's actually a feature film coming up about Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, starring Tom Hanks. Now, I have to admit that Tom Hanks is a great choice, by the way, but you wonder how that will be handled. I mean, have you, the two of you, had any insight as to how this film will be handled?
Well, it's based on a relationship that was developed between Fred and interviewer. The influence that Fred had on that person when they worked together, and I think that ultimately what it speaks to is the influence that Fred had in real relationships with the people that he knew, beyond just the television relationship that he had with people, time and time and time again. I hear stories from people who say that a single interaction with Fred in a chance encounter was life-changing for them. He had a way of simplifying an issue that somebody might have, or recognizing a problem that somebody might be wrestling with, and helping them in a very simple, kind phrase that stuck with them. And I think that's basically going to be the essence of that film, is seeing so many of those stories encapsulated into a single relationship. So we're excited about that.
I'm curious, and in our next segment, we'll be talking with a couple people who work directly with Fred Rogers, and ask them about some behind the scenes and some personal stories about Fred Rogers. But what kind of sense of humor did he have? Because I think about Eddie Murphy and Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood on Saturday Night Live, the takeoff on that. How did he look at, they weren't poking fun so much as they were having a laugh at maybe at his expense.
Well, from what I understand, Fred had a very good sense of humor. Deb talked about some of the pranks that they played on the set.
Right.
And he got a kick out of those things, was not somebody who was always Mr. Rogers the character. Mr. Rogers the character wanted very much to stay composed for his audience, And so he was a guy that liked to have fun. And again, from what I understand, he thought that the Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood sketch was funny. He thought it was done not in a mean-spirited way. And actually, at one point, had the opportunity to meet Eddie Murphy. And you know, apparently they got a picture together, and they really told each other how much they appreciated one another's work. And so he was somebody that you know, got a good joke and appreciated parody when it was, you know, not meant to be mean.
A man that was respected by everyone. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Paul Sifkin is the president and of the Fred Rogers Company, and Deborah Acklin, president and CEO of WQED Multimedia. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Sport Talk Road Trips are supported by Roof Advisory Group in Harrisburg. You're listening to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. You're listening to a special encore Smart Talk broadcast from 2 years ago that marked the 50th anniversary of the premiere of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on TV. Governor Tom Wolf has designated today as 143 Day in Pennsylvania. Inspired by Fred Rogers, Pennsylvanians are encouraged to share acts of kindness and good deeds for each other on 143 Day. So what was it like to work with Fred Rogers, and what made the show so special and the man so special? Joining us in this segment of the program is Margie Whitmer, Director of Video Production and Special Events with the Fred Rogers Company, and she served as a producer on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Ms. Whitmer, welcome to the program.
Hi, great to be here. Thanks.
Also joining us, and it's a real honor, David Newell, Mr. McFeely. How are you?
Speedy delivery.
I noticed that you were speedy as you were walking up here even during our break. Oh. So you haven't lost it.
And I have a lot of practice, yes. This is my 50th year with the Neighborhood in some way.
Really?
You were
right from the very beginning,
right? Very beginning. I started on program number one and made a delivery. Should I tell you the story?
Sure.
Okay.
We're here to tell stories.
I was delivering an armadillo, and it had something to do with the script.
It
did. At any rate, Fred showed it to the audience and so forth. And I said, well, I have to get it back to the zoo now, Mr. Rogers. And as I left, I said, well, speedy delivery. And he said, speedy delivery, Mr. McFeely, and it sort of stuck. So here I am. And that was 50 years ago. And I didn't think I would be sitting here talking to you. I thought I'd have a job for 1 year. Here I am.
Well, tell us about that very first program. Not only the armadillo, if I could say the word, armadillo delivery, but what was that very first program like?
It had something to do with, last night they actually showed it at the Fred Rogers Center. Fred Rogers Center, by the way, is on the campus of St. Vincent's College. And they showed it last night. I wasn't there, but I remember doing that program. And actually, what I do remember more than anything is when we started the program, I was in charge of the props and the costumes and so forth. And when I wasn't doing that, I would get ready and get into my costume and be Mr. McFeely. So that I did it that day. It was the first program. The phone rang, and the Sears Roebuck Foundation was calling to say, good luck, have a great show, we love it, but please don't call the delivery man Mr. McCurdy. That was the name of the delivery man at the time, because he was the president of the Sears Roebuck Foundation, and they thought it was a little too close for comfort. So Fred said, oh, okay, I could tell something was the matter. He came back in the studio, and he said, we have to get your new name. Before he finished the sentence, he said, McFeely, that's your name, Mr. McFeely. And here I am. And by the way, his middle name is Fred McFeely Rogers. And so I'm sort of carrying on the legacy. And here I am.
So 50 years later, over yes. those 50 years, how often are you referred to as Mr. McFeely versus Mr. Newell?
A lot is McFeely. A lot. The crew would call me Mac and or Speedy.
When you have a nickname for your stage name, that's a good thing.
Yes, I had a nickname for my stage name, and that was Mac. But I get both. But now yesterday I was in Oakland, and somebody stopped me to say, "Oh, David Newell," they said, and I was so surprised. They didn't know they knew the program. So it, I really like that because I loved being on the program working for the neighborhood, and that's a reward in itself to be recognized for years and years of doing something you love, which I did.
So what are your favorite memories of working with Fred Rogers and being in the neighborhood?
Oh, boy. We both have so many, I bet. But mine, and Margie can...
Well, I'm going to ask her, too.
Okay. Well, mine was, and they were all wonderful memories, but Margaret Hamilton. We had Margaret Hamilton on the program, the Wicked Witch of the West from Wizard of Oz. Mm. And a lot of people would tell us, well, you know, those monkeys and that witch scared us.
Monkeys, those flying monkeys. Scariest thing I remember as a kid.
And I mentioned to Fred one time, you know, do you think we should sort of demystify the scary part of those characters? And Fred said, well, and I told him specifically about Margaret Hamilton. And he said, and I just never forget, he said, well, if you can find her, I'll write the script. And I found her. And she was wonderful. Wonderful person. And, you know, she was an actress. So that's what she came on in her civilian clothes and talked about being in Wizard of Oz and little stories. Oh, the stories, we'd have make a two-hour program if I told you all the stories. But to make a long story short, she was in the civilian clothes, but she had the costume, the witch's costume, the one that looked like the one they wore in the movie. And she said, you know, I'm not a scary person. I'm an actress, and that's my job. And sort of demystified it. And the letters afterwards were very positive. People would write in and say, thank you for that. That was very helpful. And it started a dialogue. And as a matter of fact, that's what Fred, our original company was called Family Communications. It's now the Fred Rogers Company because I think that Fred's name needs to go on. But Fred hoped that after the program was over, ideally, they would turn the TV set off and have some family communications about what they might have seen. And so... That's just one of the many, many stories. But Madge, as I call her.
Well, Margie Whitmer. And you
have story.
Several different roles, but you were a producer with the program.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So talk about working on the program. I mean, this seems like it would just be a lot of fun every day.
Well, I guess when I first started, I didn't realize. Somewhere in the back of my head, it was like, this is it. This is the best job I could ever have. But it was kind of just way, way, way in the back of my head. But I guess the memories that I have was the atmosphere that Fred was a perfectionist, and we all had to do our best, and it was my job to try and see that everybody did their best. And that was hard. I mean, he really taught me about straighten up, you know, do it right, do the best you can do. But what I loved about the atmosphere of the studio was that it was calm, it was fun. You know, I had worked on a couple features, and they were just 16-hour days, 6 days a week. And so this, I walked into this, and not only was it what I really believed in, but it was fun, and it was hard work. But, you know, there were lots of jokes going on and things like that. And it was so wonderful to hear live music every day that a number of people came in and tried to convince Fred, just, you know, play it back, have the audio man play it back. He said no. And it was just wonderful. I remember one day, a lot of times when we were changing the sets, he would go over and play the piano just to pass the time. And so one day we put a tip jar on the piano. And so at the end of the day, we all left the studio, and I went back to my desk, and there was an envelope, and I had put a dollar in. And so the envelope said something like, Dear Margie, some people say this is too much. I mean, some people say this is not enough. Others say it's too much.
When you say that Fred was a perfectionist, as the producer of the show, were there times where he came to you and said, Margie, that just didn't work. there's something that we should be doing better here. I'm not going to ask whether he got angry because, I mean, everyone sometimes isn't as pleasant as they could be. But were there times that he came to you as the producer of the program and said, I'd like to do this a little bit differently, that didn't work?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember a number of times calling Carnegie Library to make sure that we were saying something correctly. Or, pretty much by the time we got to the studio, it was decided what we were going to do and how we were going to do it. But actually, there was a time when we did a piece where he was trying to learn this hand game with somebody named Ella Jenkins. And it was head, shoulders, knees, and toes. And he got really confused. And I remember sitting in the control room thinking, well, I guess we're going to do this over again, but let's not stop the tape. This will be a rehearsal. So whenever we would finish a piece, we would look at it, and then if it was good, we'd just move on, right? And so they set up to look at it, and I was thinking, I told the props people to start setting up to redo it, and he said, you know what, we're going to keep this. And I said, what? And he said, yeah. He said, kids need to know that people make mistakes. And so that's kind of an opposite story, but I just shook my head and I said, okay. And so when I saw the piece, I realized what a smart move that was. And there are other pieces where he buttons his sweater wrong that stayed there because he really wanted kids to know the truth.
What a life lesson that is, though.
Yeah.
That and compared to what else children see on TV where everything is scripted, if something like that happened, it would be a do-over. But teaching kids that everyone makes mistakes, and I mean, that's not a huge mistake, but just showing them, I mean, again, just a great life lesson.
Well, he was clearly having fun, too, because he was trying to do it. He was laughing, so it wasn't mean-spirited at all. You know,
no.
It was just, I didn't get it. It's hard to learn something new.
That's a great story. Now, I have another story. Can I call you Mr. McFeely? I won't call you Mac because I don't know you well enough.
You can call me David.
David.
Actually, the name was David McFeely on the program.
Oh,
so
okay.
So that
all
works.
Right. David, I'll call you David.
Okay.
But I was told that I should ask you about this by someone here at the museum, that the exhibit, the Mr. Rogers exhibit that is here at the Heinz History Center, I'm going to be talking with a couple people from the museum here in a few minutes about the exhibit, mm-hmm. original set pieces. But the Great Oak Tree
yes.
is there. Your bicycle
yes.
is there. I understand that you can point out the exact place on that oak tree that you ran into with your bike.
Oh, I can. The original bike was a two-wheeler, and growing up, I never really learned to ride a bike. We lived on this steep hill. And so I never learned to ride a bike. And the first time that I learned or tried to learn was during the taping. So I started out to deliver X the Owl a package. And when I came around, I had to drive around the tree and then stop in front of his nut hole in the tree. And as I was driving around the tree, I ran right into the branch. And at that point, you could hear the technicians and the cameraman laughing. And Fred walked around and said, what did you do?
This was on the show.
No.
Oh,
he
okay.
did not keep that.
Okay.
But it is an outtake. But it was very embarrassing, but very funny. I mean, I just remember that his name was Dick Reshoff, the cameraman. And he... He never forgot the story. I was reminded of it daily, well, maybe weekly.
But maybe later today when we go down to take a look at the...
I'll show you exactly where I ran into the... Now, the bike that you see on display here at the museum, or the center, they call it,
right,
is
right.
A three-wheeler. I think Fred finally said, okay, he can't ride a bike. I'll get a three-wheeler. So that's what happened.
You know, Margie, when you were talking about all the characters and we were talking about how they were developed over the years, as producer of the program, now, Fred played a lot of these parts, almost all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Many people may not know that, but having characters, having puppets, wasn't a big set or anything like that, but what kind of challenge does that present when you have all these puppets, all these characters, Fred doing all the voices?
I guess by the time I came on, it really wasn't so much of a problem. It's just that he would try not to write two scenes back to back where he had to be the puppet voice. Or, I mean, we knew when we sat down to put together the production schedule that we were going to have to stop tape at some point so he could run to the next puppet set and get ready. So, I mean, it wasn't really a challenge. It was just figuring out how to do it, and it became pretty easy.
And that's really almost any TV show.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Did he have a favorite of his characters? I mean, maybe the two of you know.
I don't know that, but I think that he was most like Daniel. Mm. I think that that's who he really identified with, is Daniel.
Why?
Because he was a shy kid, because I think that, you know, he spent a lot of his life helping kids feel good about themselves, have good self-esteem, and I think that that was part of his journey for himself. And so Daniel is the one that's nervous, that's shy, that, you know, is more, it relates to the four-year-old or the child watching. So I think that's who he really...
I think you're right. I think his sense of humor, though, came out in King Friday. Mm-hmm. King Friday had a wonderful, you know, very regal, and Lady Elaine had a sense of humor. That's where the sense of humor came, through the puppets.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Lady Elaine. It wasn't like all the characters were... You know, all the people liked them a lot. Lenny Elaine sometimes kind of had her own little way of sense of humor and fought back a little bit.
Oh, she was feisty.
She was feisty, okay. In fact, I saw that word using her, describing her earlier today. But King Friday, I think back to the early days in 1968, that King Friday actually wanted to build a wall.
That's right, yes.
Around the kingdom.
Yes.
I hate to say that we can relate to that today.
Yeah,
do you remember the story?
See, we're up to date. Yeah, yeah. It's a little foggy, but yes, you're right. He did want to build a wall, and he was voted down. That's all I'll say. But I was going to say something as you were... I was thinking about it. Now I think I've lost it. It's something to do with a puppet. Now I've lost it.
All right, well, think about it. I do that all the time, too. The voices, I mean, once you realize as an adult, we were talking earlier about how your adult eyes see the characters. Mm-hmm. And once you realize that Fred did most of the voices, I don't know, a lot of times you don't want to know that because... You'll hear, oh, okay, I can hear Fred's voice in those characters. But how did he do all that, all those characters?
Well, you know, when he was a little boy, he was quite ill, so he spent a lot of time at home in bed. And so he had these puppets that he played with, and so I think that that's where the puppet characters came from and the voices came from, is that that's how he played. And they just transferred, you know, to his adulthood. So I think that's, you know, his voice changed as he got older, but I think in his mind, he was able to definitely convert, you know, change characters quickly.
That's what I wanted to tell you, that each puppet, in a way, represented the child's personality. Daniel was shy, as Margie was saying, and Lady Lane had a mischievous quality, and X the Owl wanted to learn, and King Friday was an authoritarian figure. All of those were elements of a child's personality, and Fred wove them all together, and it used Daniel when he was talking about a certain subject, a shyness or whatever, he would use Daniel, and Lady Lane would get into trouble, that type of thing. So and I think he enjoyed doing King Friday for the humor, but Marky's right. I think Daniel Tiger is Fred Rogers, his mouthpiece of sorts.
Well, you're right. We could talk all day about these memories, but I want to thank you very much for sharing your memories with us today. Margie Whitmer is the director of video production and special events with the Fred Rogers Company and served as producer of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. David Newell, Mr. McFeely, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, and speedy delivery.
Smart Talk Road Trips are supported by Roof Advisory Group in Harrisburg. You're listening to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. You're listening to a special encore Smart Talk broadcast from 2 years ago that marked the 50th anniversary of the premiere of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on TV. Governor Tom Wolf has designated today as 143 Day in Pennsylvania. Inspired by Fred Rogers, Pennsylvanians are encouraged to share acts of kindness and good deeds for each other on 143 Day. The Heinz History Center is hosting an exhibit commemorating Fred Rogers and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Joining us is Emily Ruby, curator at the Heinz History Center, and Dr. Mary Ruth Leftwich, director of education at the Heinz History Center. Welcome to the program. Well, let me talk about the exhibit, first of all, and have you describe it, since this is radio. I will have some pictures. We'll have some pictures on our website a little bit later. But have you describe the exhibit and what visitors to the History Center can see?
Well, right now, when you come into our fourth floor special collections gallery, you're greeted by paintings of 90 neighborhoods of Pittsburgh. And that's a great segue into the neighborhood of Mr. Rogers, the set, and the neighborhood of Make Believe. So right now, you'll see a figure of Mr. Rogers sitting on his actual bench with the door behind him, his actual set that he came into every day and, you know, put his sweater and shoes on. And also, we have elements of the neighborhood of Make Believe. We have the tree, ex the owl tree, and the castle. And some items, some props, some puppets, and we're going to put his sweater and shoes out for his birthday. So that will be another
moment. What is his birthday, by the way?
March 20th.
March 20th?
Yes.
So you mentioned that there is the figure, the representation of Fred Rogers, mm-hmm. the sweater that he's wearing, the canvas sneakers.
Yes.
Are they original?
Not on the figure.
Oh.
No, no, but we do have originals, and people always ask what they are. They are Sperry's. So,
yeah, we mentioned a little bit earlier that Fred Rogers' mother made the sweaters, the cardigans that he wore for mm-hmm. many years, but unfortunately she passed away, and then after that, I understand that they had to go out and buy other sweaters that he could wear. But I don't know, when the first time I saw the exhibit, I thought, this is, there are many times in a museum, you know, history center like this, where you'll see something and say, well, that looks a little bit different than what it looked like on TV. Not this. This looks exactly what you saw on TV.
And we were able to bring in a lot of the props that were used on the show as well. So that adds a little life to the set. And one of the great things is if anyone has ever gone to the Neighborhood Archives online, you can look through every episode and read about what happened on that episode. And we've been able to find how those props were used, what episode, and there's even screenshots. So that's been a wonderful resource for us when we're researching the set.
So as a curator for the museum, I mean, obviously you're working with a lot of Western Pennsylvania and Pittsburgh history here. But talk about the Fred Rogers, the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood exhibit itself. What were you looking to do when you're putting this together?
Well, this is such an important Pittsburgh story. It's a national story, but we have the unique story that it's set here in Western Pennsylvania. So everyone connects to it that grew up watching Mr. Rogers. But we can also add those Western Pennsylvania elements to it because a lot of the cast and crew are from this area. We can add those stories of working on the set and what they experienced. And Mary Ruth can also talk about some of what we're trying to connect with children today through Mr. Rogers.
Did you watch Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood growing up?
So this is interesting. I actually didn't have a television growing up. So, no, I didn't. And so a lot of what I learned was here at the History Center. And so the big thing was we borrowed the set. It was on loan to us for the 1968 exhibit. It was a touring exhibit that we hosted here. And so I did a lot of the research on the year 1968. And you talked about this earlier, but I thought, wow, I mean, it was so impactful to me that it came out in that year of particular kind of strife and violence, and he's this calm voice in the midst of that.
Maybe the calmest voice of all during that chaotic year. Dr. Leftwich, Director of Education, and we have heard many times over this hour of how much it meant to Fred Rogers that he communicated directly one-on-one with children. For many kids, before they were going to school, this was their education. Why was it so important? Why is it so important that young children be exposed to something like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and be educated without even knowing it? They're being entertained, but they're learning at the same time.
I think that's really interesting because I work with an audience that's both the adults that grew up with Mr. Rogers, and I work with little kids who have no idea who Mr. Rogers is. And we have to try and make the connections, and certainly the work that Fred Rogers did as an innovator in media and in early learning and understanding the importance of taking what we know about young children as learners and transforming that into media is huge. And that's the part of the work we do in education, is understanding the innovations that he brought to that early media. And really being a pioneer in understanding what we need, what little kids need to learn about not only the world around them, but about themselves. And so it's the pieces of empathy and it's the pieces of understanding human interaction and relationships that are really important. And that's obviously lived on in the work of Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. So a lot of the kids I work with, they don't know Mr. Rogers, but they know Daniel Tiger. And I had a kid once tell me, he's like, "So why did Mr. Rogers steal Daniel Tiger?" I'm like, "No, it was the other way around. Mr. Rogers is the one that brought Daniel Tiger." Because it was Daniel Stripe a Tiger. We do a little bit about tiger genealogy in some of our programs. But I think understanding the uniqueness that early learners are in that point in their lives, and really being able to tap into that through the media is what's so important.
You know, I sit here and I'm just marveling at how each program had those kind of lessons, that kind of educational message to children. I mean, many adults probably looked at Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and said, "Oh, okay, he's a gentleman, he's a nice man, he is teaching kids along the way," but probably had no idea, unless they thought about it, of actually what he was doing, what he was teaching children.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Part of the work that we do is to try and take a lens to go back and look at Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and say, what was he trying to achieve? And we've used some of his writings that look at learning readiness for young kids. And then we take that, we look back at the show, so we can really outline, we can see where was he talking about curiosity? Where was he talking about the importance of play, the importance of relationships? And it's only, I think, with that lens that you begin to understand the complexity of what Fred Rogers was doing on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
So how do you use the exhibit today when you're talking with a younger audience?
So we use it as both inspiration, and for our older audiences, we use it as a nostalgia piece. We do a program called Hop Into History, which is for preschoolers. We actually did our Mr. Rogers Hop Into History last week, and we'll do a few more this year because they've been so popular. Anytime we do Mr. Rogers with early learners, there's popularity. And it's funny, I had to explain to them what a set was. So little kids don't understand the concept of a set. And just sort of explaining, so we use pictures that show Fred Rogers and other people actually on the set, so they get a sense of what the pieces they see there are. We then also show some of the actual episodes and of both Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and then Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. And that's when they're like, "Oh, the tree, the castle." There's so many similarities between those that they begin to understand it at that point.
Wow. It's a wonderful exhibit, and congratulations to both of you. I mean, it's been here for a while now. It was actually in 2015 that the Heinz History Center brought the Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood exhibit here. Again, congratulations, and there's so much attention around the country, and I'm sure even around the world, on Mr. Rogers and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood today. So many people are probably excited to see the exhibit. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
I want to thank everyone here, our audience, our studio audience, and the Senator John Heinz History Center here in Pittsburgh. Just a wonderful day and wonderful day in the neighborhood, folks. I'm Scott Lamar. Enjoy the rest of your day.
It It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine?